Hello and welcome, everyone. You may not realize that we still have a podcast, but we do. So we have a very special episode of MTG Potpourri, bringing it back for March of 2015. This is Tom. Most people cannot do a podcast by themselves, and I can't either. So I have two, I would say, incredibly handsome and talented podcast hosts with me today, and that's Adam Staborski.
Hey, everybody.
And Naked. And Conley Woods.
So I don't know what I'm supposed to say without being accused of being naked, so hello, everybody.
But I was kind of saying, there's really no way you could win with that.
Exactly. That's just going to let it go.
Typically how I like to podcast. I like to trap my co-hosts into a corner and just wait for them to embarrass themselves.
It doesn't take much out of me.
See, this is how I finally figured you out, Tom. So, like, you know, you keep saying, well, I'm at the hospital, I'm saving lives, of long shifts, whatever. And your mantra is do no harm, right? That's like the whole medical deal, right? Do no harm.
Or it hurts so good. That's the other. They call me, you know, Dr. Feelgood.
Right. So the thing is, Tom, is while you've been saving all of those lives of people that I'm never going to meet, you have broken my heart. You have not fulfilled your oath to do no harm because you have harmed me. I don't know what to do about it.
He said he bruised it. I admit, so as everybody is probably quite aware, it is 110% me that tends to tank this podcast about 2 out of 3 times.
Occasionally one of the rest of us steps in. We have lives too.
Yeah, rare occasion. And this one, I actually just got back from vacation about 11 p.m. last night. So that's how dedicated I am, Adam, to making you feel good, is I'm still podcasting tonight.
I like it when you make me feel good.
I could do it. Oh, God. Did you read? Yeah. I mean, this was around the time of we're going off rails already. So this is for Valentine's Day this year.
What rails are there?
I've got bed rails, baby. We're off those rails, if you know what I mean. So apparently there's like a whole line now of like internet connected sex toys. Did you read any of these? There, it was all over. It was like on Wired and Engadget.
Dude, bro, I know about this way more than you.
Yeah, apparently Conley can tell me more because I was.
I don't actually know. I don't know about. I only know about there was like a cam model.
I listened to him backpedal.
No, there was like I just know about a cam model one where like you know how there's like cam sites where you can like pay to see men or women do sexual things or whatever. There was a toy that I read about where it's a 2-part thing. Both parties have to have the device, and basically what one person does to the device, like it'll like be in the shape of whichever opposite sex thing, and whatever you do to the electrical device on one side electronically transfers, and those movements are like re-put out by the other side of the device that's going the opposite direction or whatever. So like you basically have electronic sex with each other via like you feel each other's movements, and like if like theoretically if you got the thing wet on one end, like it would secrete some type of lubricant on the other end or whatever. Like it like tries to match it identically. It was like super creepy but kind of interesting at the same time.
Well, they made that thing real. That was like a meme internet joke back in 2007 of the it was FUF me. It was like this. Supposedly, it went like you're basically looked like a you know like the old like sort of CD-ROM drives were like a DDD drive in your computer, you know, sort of rectangular big square thing. Except this just had like a piston that would shoot in and out. And it was called the FUF me.
Oh no, this was I don't remember. I think it was something like touch something. I don't know. It was something like specifically they would sell them to like cam models, and then you would buy the other end of it, and then you can enjoy yourself, I guess. Wow. I don't know.
Life is weird in that fashion. Have either of you guys read or listened to Ready Player One by Ernest Cline?
No.
Oh. I guess, Conley, would you consider yourself a child of the 80s? Or are you a child of the 90s?
I'm definitely not a child. I lived during 3 years and 1 month of the 80s. I don't think that counts as a child of the 80s.
Are you a fan of, like, we'll say vintage video games. So we're talking like Atari 2600.
No, I'm a fan of Nintendo and Sega and that generation.
Okay. It's a book.
I appreciate those older games, but I would not consider myself like a product of that generation of video games.
It's still an amazing novel. It might not affect you quite as much as say, like, I would guess Adam and me being it was right in our wheelhouse as being children of the 80s, where every single reference that this guy drops, you're just like, damn, I know exactly what you're talking about. But it's a very cool sort of near future quasi dystopian where there's now a basically there's like almost like a real Matrix where people can jack in. It's cheap, free, basically free, like virtual reality and how that affects the world. It's a fantastic novel if you can get your hands on it. Ernest Cline.
All right.
I'm not sure what we're talking about anymore. Somehow we got on to internet-connected sex toys already.
It's really weird to listen to you talk about sex toys.
Tom.
Yeah, first of all, you brought it up. Second of all, just so everyone knows, your Skype picture is basically just your child. And listening to you talk about sex toys while I'm staring at a picture of a cute little girl sitting on your lap is utterly disturbing.
That's good. It's almost as disturbing as your picture. It looks like you're kind of sauntering up to me to either bum a cigarette or potentially break some sort of law.
Well, I mean, maybe this second. Mm-hmm. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, so no.
I don't know. I can see chest hair in this picture.
That's fair.
There's at least two buttons undone on this picture I'm looking at.
I've been secretly hiding myself for the last X amount of months. Nobody's really been able to see. I've been slowly transforming and becoming Macho Hunk 2000.
So you just get all kind of, you know, tan, lingerie, gym, or wherever the magic combo is?
Macho Hunk 1000.
I don't know, but I just went for 2000. That just seemed like a better number, you know?
So you're going to be like Sylvester Stallone and Demolition Man, and you're going to do the hunka-chunka? That's like the way that's the way he describes having sex, is doing the hunka-chunka?
No, but during my my magic hiatus, my break or whatever I'm taking, I have been focusing on my health quite a bit. I've lost about 80 pounds so far.
Oh, congratulations.
It's pretty nice. And a bit, I've new hairstyles and stuff. I got to get some photos up on Facebook, but I've been mostly secretly doing this. I've tried the like public weight loss thing in the past, and it was fun, but it really wasn't the type of motivation I needed. I needed to kind of be intrinsically motivated. So I don't know.
How about, well, maybe you could just be intrinsically motivated. Now, it's not coming from the inside or the outside. It just is.
Okay. Like Descartes motivation.
Exactly. Just fair. Just be the motivation. All right, guys. We're actually a magic podcast.
What's magic?
Allegedly. Oh.
Yeah. I mentioned the word magic in my little divergence.
Yeah, I was quite proud of you. So I've been gone for a week. I'm back. Conley, I've been trying to catch up on magic news. Did you win a tournament or something? I saw some Twitter posts. I had no internet connection for about a week.
I win a tournament. I certainly did not win a tournament. I haven't played any tournaments, so I don't think I won any tournaments.
Oh, okay. Because I got back, I saw some sort of Facebook post of yours saying something unexpected happened. And I combed through all the comments where it's either you're pregnant or I figured you'd won some sort of a tournament.
Oh, are you talking about I literally just said the best things are never planned or something like that.
Yeah, and then
you took that to mean that I won a tournament?
I thought so, because I knew you were getting back into, like, starting your new competitive magic, and, like, I thought maybe, like, hey, my first tournament I went to, bam, I brought it, and I did it.
First of all, even if you did think that was magic-related, that's the first topic you wanted to cover of all the things.
I was interested. I was just like, I don't know what he's talking about. I'm not good with secrets. You can ask my family and my wife that I can't buy the gift for the persons whose birthday is coming up because I will tell them before their birthday happens.
That's fair. It was not magic related. I had an excellent night and I posted about it somewhat cryptically because I enjoyed myself.
God, there's so many ways you could take that one.
I mean, feel free to take it however you want. I don't care. But it was not magic related.
Okay. Was there more than just you involved in this?
Yes, of course there was more. You just enjoyed yourself.
We just talked about internet-connected sex toys, so you could totally have been by yourself.
All right. Can we talk about real magic things now and not messages that may or may not be magic related because they were posted by me?
Sure.
All right, cool.
Adam, take it away. We have a whole new magic set that we're starting to get previews for.
There be dragons!
Yeah.
God, Dragons Are Here is coming. I'm actually super, super excited.
Where be the our dragons?
In magical booster packs that you can purchase for $3.99.
You're supposed to say in them bills.
In them.
There's dragons in them bills.
Instead of just like flipping out the dollar bills, he's just flipping out packs of Dragons Are Here.
Right.
Okay, keep going. We've got cards.
Yeah, lots of cards.
Because I'm waiting for Conley to bring down the hammer of Well, we'll talk about what I think of Megamorph, but
sure. Well, I mean, you know, they basically had like the big reveal, like all the stuff's on the table today, like mechanic wise. So basically, like some mechanics are coming back, some mechanics aren't. Basically, the whole thrust of the set is Sarkon succeeded. You know, he went back into his timey wimey wibbly wombly bullshit and fixed up Ugin after he got his ass kicked by Bolas.
First of all, you sound a little biased, Adam. We're going to need some unbiased commentary from here, buddy. You sound like you're one-sided on this deal. One guy's bullshitting and getting his ass kicked. Like, we're going to need some, like, you know, neutral commentary.
Yeah, I need a Fox News opinion of this.
All right, so let's enter the no-spin multiverse. So, spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't
spoiler alert, because I this is how I know my magic lore at this point.
Yeah, so Sarkon Vol found where Ugin, the spirit dragon's body, had fallen. So he died in the past. He was killed by Bolas, and through there, I'm not exactly familiar with the exact mechanics, but basically he went back to Tarkir's past, basically like 1,200 years into its past, when Ugin was still kicking and the Khans were still like fighting dragons and it was a cool thing. And so basically what happened was he wanted to originally stop Bolas, and go fight Bolas with Ugin, but as anybody who's familiar with kind of planeswalkers today versus planeswalkers in the past, planeswalkers in the past were like pretty much nigh invulnerable, mostly omnipotent gods, like Greek gods, like just super fickle personal jerks. And that's exactly all the planeswalkers in the past. You can read about them. So instead of having, you know, a new planeswalker, which is very, very mortal and very, very weak in comparison, joining in the fight, basically he sees the fight go down and Bolas loses, obviously. Bolas wins. So Ugin does fall, literally falls from the sky, crashes down, and basically like a little piece of the Hedron that Sarkon had found on Zendikar, like somehow triggers with Ugin and like puts him in like a cocoon. And that cocoon type structure you can see in the Crucible of the Spirit Dragon, the rare card that is like a charge up land for casting dragon spells, make mana of any color and cast a dragon spell with it. So it's an unplayable limited card until now, basically. So you jump back 1,200 years into the future, and basically it's like Khans Tarkir never happened. Like, that's an alternate reality. That's what we first saw. But it actually doesn't exist. The canon of the Magicverse is now this new Dragons of Tarkir, the new place where the Dragon Lords have taken over. There's no Khans. The Dragon Broods are kind of the dominant powerhouse of the plane. And you know, in a quirky twist of fate, five of them happen to align with the five different clans that we've already met, and they're the allied color pair in those enemy colors. So it's a little bit of shift of color. It's a little bit of shift of mechanics, which is why some of them come back and then some of them are new. But that's kind of like where we are in the story. They also revealed the packaging for the booster packs. So the packaging shows a Sarkon looking very planeswalkery, and it also shows a female looking kind of planeswalkery. I think it's Narset. I need to go back and actually read the stories, but it's my understanding that Narset could have been a planeswalker and wasn't. Her spark didn't fire, and now it looks like maybe in this alternate future there's two planeswalkers from Tarkir, Sarkon and now this other one, Narset, from the Jeskai. So that's kind of where we're at with Dragons Tarkir. Do we want to talk about cards now?
I would love to talk about cards. I don't know. I feel like I've lost touch a little bit with the magic lore.
What's a card?
I'm going to tell you, we're going to talk about some really cool cards.
All right. So I'll just run down kind of like the examples that they gave for the different. The different mechanics. It's pretty easy. Bolsters back, and it's just like it was before. Like the Sandcrafter Mage is like a 2/2 white gray ogre, and when it enters the battlefield, you bolster. Whoa, so it's kind of like getting three power for three mana. But
yeah,
like,
that's a sicko limited card.
Yeah, like, it's going to be solid and limited. Especially great with stuff like Sandstep Outcast. So, like, you make, like, a 1-1 spirit next turn, cast this guy, attack with a 2-2 spirit. Seems nice. Stuff like that is going to happen. There's a Rebound is a returning mechanic. So Rebound, interestingly enough, was seen last with Rise of the Eldrazi. So Rebound is basically, it's an instant and sorcery only spell where ability where whenever you cast the spell, basically instead of resolving and going to your graveyard, the first time it resolves, it goes to exile. And if you remember the Rebound trigger during your next upkeep, and that's what you need to do, like, you basically get to cast it again for free on your next upkeep.
But on paper, though, Adam, is there anything to prevent them from putting this on a creature card?
Yes, because it would do it does nothing.
Exiled when it's cast. So it's like a creature, theoretically, if it had Rebound, you would cast it, it would get exiled and do nothing and be like suspended one, and then next turn come into play. So it really wouldn't do anything.
Okay, unless it created a token or something like that.
Yeah, which is the example.
Which would make it a spell. Okay.
Ujutai summons, as I said.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they kind of gave us an example in the set of that. Okay.
Yeah, you get a 2-2 flying Jin monk, which is a weird thing to say, for 5 mana, and then it rebounds, you get another one. So for 5 total mana, over the course of 2 turns, you get 2-2 flyers, which is not the greatest card in the world, but it's a common. So
Okay.
Right. And for comparison, like the last time we saw something like this, there was, I can't remember the name of the spell, but it was Magic 2013. There was a spell that made 2 flying 2-2 drakes, I believe, for 4 mana. As
Tyrant summons.
Yeah, so that's kind of, it's not as comparable because you're not able to attack with a 4 power the next turn, but it is pretty, you know, if you need a 5 drop and you need flyers, like, it probably works. Another returning, or another new mechanic, the first new one that came up is Exploit. And Exploit's really cool. Basically, Exploit is it's on creatures, and its reminder text is when this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature. And that's all it does, is basically when it enters the battlefield, you can sacrifice a creature. If you do, there's some other ability that triggers that whenever that card exploits a creature. So
it might not necessarily be a trigger. It's some event happens. Like, I could imagine some of these just like saying it gets a keyword or something like that. But the examples they give at least are triggers.
Well, it looks like the triggers are tied to the card it's from. So, like, for example, like Sidisi Undead Busy. So if you remember Sidisi Brood Tyrant, well, Sidisi's dead, and she's a legendary zombie naga in Dragonstark here in this timeline. So it's a 4/6 death touch for 5 mana, which is just awesome already. And then it has Exploit, and it says when Sidisi Undead Vizier exploits a creature, you may search your library for a card, put it in your hand, and shuffle your library. So, you know, it looks like the Exploit trigger is tied to the creature that generates it. So it's a one-time effect. Like, you can't just keep, like it sounds like it's written so you can't just chain the Exploit deck, right? Like, let's say I cast Hordling Outburst, make 3 tokens, right? And then I cast Exploit Guy, Exploit Guy, Exploit Guy. By the time I'm casting the 3rd Exploit Guy, I'm not getting 3 different Exploit triggers all at once from sacrificing that last token. That's my understanding of the mechanic.
Yeah.
But like, Sidisi is great because like you sacrifice a token, you get to basically Demonic Tutor. It even by itself, like if you have nothing else going on, you can just cast her and sacrifice herself to her own exploit trigger. So it's a really flexible, powerful card. Like I'm not able to see where it might fit in like a standard deck or what deck needs it, but I know in Commander this card is just going to be like super nice because it's like a creature, super super recurable, easy to abuse creature in black reanimation. You can just like basically tutor your deck out fairly straightforwardly.
So do you feel like Exploit's going to be a black only keyword?
No, it'll probably be one of the clans.
Right, so it'll be in blue and black, because all the dragons are like allied color.
So if you take every trio that we know about, so Sultai, Jeskai, etc., and you find whatever pair in there is the normal allied colors, so white, blue, blue, black, etc., blue, black, and Sultai, white, blue, and Jeskai, etc., black, red, and Mardu. You find whatever that pair is, and then that's what the clan is in this set. So there's a black-red clan, there's a black-blue clan, there's a blue-white clan, white-green clan, and green-red clan.
Okay. Except it would have been kind of cool if this was black only. You could make a black exploitation deck and call it like Dolomite or Shaft or something.
I don't think that's.
You don't think that's what they were going for? I saw Blackula. I could say it.
I am 100% sure somebody is going to try to make a mono black blaxploitation deck and feel like they're the cleverest player alive.
Yes, and it's going to happen everywhere. He's sitting on this side of the microphone.
Yeah. Dash is another returning mechanic. That's from Fate Reforged, and it's the red and white mechanic in this. Or the red and black mechanic in the set where basically you just pay a small amount of mana less than
the creature
costs, and it comes in the battlefield, has haste, and at the end of the turn you have to return it to your hand. Dash is deceptively strong, especially with creatures that have abilities that trigger when you attack, so obviously like Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury, being kind of like a repeatable anthem, repeatable pump effect every turn, flying dash over and over and over, is super nice. Goblin Heel Cutter is a very strong common from Fate Reforged in red, so I'm excited to see what they do with dash, or the potential is that we see more cards that are powerful like that, or they kind of toned it back after discovering how strong it can be. So excited about that. The other new mechanic is not a mechanic. It's one of those ability words. And basically it replaces Ferocious, which is also an ability word. And basically this is a kind of a twist on Ferocious. It's formidable. So it's bigger, longer Ferocious basically. And it's a creature ability. It's an ability that just basically checks the total power of creatures you have. So for example, Stampeding Elk Herd is a 5/5 for 5. So it's a fine, definitely solid and limited. And it says formidable. Whenever Stampeding Elk Herd attacks, if creatures you control have total power 8 or greater, creatures you control gain trample until end of turn. So when he's by himself, he's just a 5/5 for 5. But if like you've curved out like 2, 3, 4, 5 drop here, and then you start attacking with this herd, like all of your dudes are going to get trample. So it's a nice way to it's one of those things that'll help break through in limited. It is a common, so it's definitely one of those cards where like if you have a one of in your deck and you have a bunch, if you have like the Ferocious Formidable deck and your game is to play like Feral Krushox and big things like that, this guy's gonna benefit you well.
I wish they could have templated this a little differently so it didn't always have to be 8 power. It seems like they could have maybe done something interesting by varying the variable. But it just seems like it could have been a little more interesting to me.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if necessarily 8 power is fixed. So like formidable is just an ability word that says, hey, this these are all similar.
According to the Dragons of Tarkir basically rules page on the magicwizards.com, it says it's 8 power. Yeah, 8 or greater.
Yeah, it's effectively double ferocious. They want you to meet ferocious twice is kind of the story behind it. Obviously, you can get there by 8/1/1s this time, which is kind of neat. But I think that the reason that they have it set at 8 always is because it's kind of a big number and a big event to count up. It's kind of like Tarmogoyf math or whatever. Like when you play a Tarmogoyf, the game pauses for a second. Everybody looks at the graveyards and you figure out the size of the Tarmogoyf, and like that takes some amount of time. And Formidable as a limited mechanic is going to come up quite often. And every time somebody plays a new Formidable creature, whatever, you're going to have to look down and count up the total power of your creatures. And I think if there was a bunch of different numbers, like I need to hit 8, 11, etc., like theoretically you could go to the highest number, see if it hits, and then move down or whatever, but you're still having to do different amounts of math all the time. And since it's already sort of complex, I think like they were just like, let's just keep it at a fixed number, 8's already pretty high, etc. But I can understand where Tom's coming from, but I think for purposes of like making things go smoothly for tournament play, I think having it fixed is reasonable.
Yeah, and down the road, like if they come back to Formidable, like there's nothing. It's my understanding there's nothing about Formidable that explicitly says this is you need 8 power. Like they could bring it back and say 9 or 7 or something totally different like that. And the other thing is the way Stampeding Elk Herd is written. It's written with an intervening if clause, which is kind of, if you're into rules lingo, is kind of one of those sexy things where it looks to check for its qualifier both when it goes when it goes on the stack. So say it doesn't even go on the stack if you don't have 8 power. But once it's on the stack, it also checks when it resolves. So
in this case, it just says when it attacks, if creatures you control have 8 or more power, so you have to have 8 or more power to trigger, and then from there on out, it just says creatures you control gain trample.
Well, let me read. I was reading the mechanics page here. So let me just read that they used Stampeding Elkhart, obviously, as their example. As you mentioned, intervening if, blah, 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 blah. Abilities like this check the condition 2 times. Once when the ability would trigger, and then also if the ability does trigger, it checks whether you still control creatures with power 8 or greater to see if it resolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is all one of this particular card is all one of it. Are you trying to say it's like 2 events because it has the when it attacks? Because this is like when it attacks, the trigger goes off and then it resolves. So it's like nothing, no individual things that need to happen between those 2 things.
No, it's not two separate triggers, but it won't trigger at all if you don't have 8 power. And if you do have 8 power, it triggers. And in response to the trigger, you kill something, so there's less than 8 power. When the trigger goes to resolve, it says, hey, there is an 8 power here. I'm not doing my thing.
Exactly.
That's what the intervening if does. So it's one of those things where, like I push in with, 10 power of creatures, and you nuke my 4-4, suddenly my dudes won't get trample in response. So it's, one of those really subtle things where in combat, being aware that if it's a formidable trigger on attack, you can interfere with that. Or if somebody casts a spell and while it's waiting to resolve, there's a formidable piece of it, kind of like with Ferocious, you can do something about it in response. So it's just, it's one of those things to keep in mind that may not necessarily be obvious if you just look at it.
And kind of 2 other things I thought was interesting in their example is, in the previous paragraph, in response to this intervening if, is they give this example that you have a 0-3, a 4-4, and an 8-8. So this would be a total power of 12. I guess I didn't realize that I seen this in Duels of the Planeswalker, that if I cast a spell that gave the 4-4 a, their example is a -6/-0, that creature's power is technically a -2. It doesn't just become a 0. So they would say you would now have a 0-3, a -2/4, and an 8-8, so their total power is 6, which I thought was interesting. I didn't realize that it kept track to a negative power.
Yeah, negative power and negative life totals, both things get tracked.
Yeah, I guess it's rare
if
that
if you have Platinum Angel out, you don't just sit at 0 life. You have to actually track what negative number you're at.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, and also, they also give a little hint in the third paragraph of this is that it says other formidable abilities are activated abilities.
Sure. Yeah, it's just going to be Ferocious. There'll probably be instances of sorceries with it. There'll probably be these trigger guys. There'll probably be activated guys. It's just checks to see if you have any power.
And then the final mechanic is kind of new, morph. But kind of not.
Just morph. It's, you may cast a spell face down as a 2/2 creature for 3. Turn it face up anytime for its morph cost.
Yeah. So the whole gist is morph was a thing in Khanzaturk here because manifest was a thing way back in the day. So the idea is that in the future, what happens to manifest? Does it evolve into something different? Does it evolve into morph? It should be different. So basically they settled on megamorph. And megamorph is basically exactly like morph, but if you megamorph something, so you flip it up for its megamorph cost, when you flip it up, you automatically get to put a +1/+1 counter on it.
It sounds like it makes sense for the lore, but it seemed an incredibly underwhelming ability to me.
Go, go, Power Rangers.
To me, I posted on Twitter, I thought of Mega Maid from Spaceballs.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping there's a Power Ranger that has Megamorph.
Oh, and keep in mind that if you're looking for patterns or anything like that, Megamorph doesn't necessarily always cost more than Morph. One of the examples we got, it Megamorphs for 2 mana, and it's on a 2-drop. So,
it's Megamorph. Yeah,
yeah. Megamorph is not always it's going to cost 10 more mana than regular Morph costs do. The other example does have a Megamorph cost of 6, so it is a little expensive. But it's going to be a big range just like Morph. There's basically going to be no difference between Morph and Megamorph costs other than the fact that one gets a +1/+1 counter.
Yeah. Well, the trick about Megamorph costs is that it still follows the Morph rule, the Morph limited rule, which was they explained as if you're paying an amount of mana to flip up to turn face up a morph creature that won't trade with a face down. That is, won't trade with another with an unmorphed 2/2. It has to cost at least 5 mana. So that's where like Stratus Dancer kind of fits into the mix, because it's a two drop flying for 2, and it's a rare. So it's kind of like the just a nice little aggressive 2-drop for like, you know, like a blue-white deck. But it's Megamorph. You know, if you cast as a face-down 2/2, you can flip it up for 1 and a blue. You'll have a 3/2 flying, which is really sweet. But it's, you know, it has like the morph kind of deal where when you turn it face-up, you counter-target instant or sorcery spell. So it's one of those. It's very, you know, I kind of read it very similarly to how I do Mistfire Adept. Mistfire Weaver, the 3/1 that when you turn it up, you give target creature hexproof. So basically, it's just going to counter a removal spell, is more or less what you can read it as. So it's a really great kind of tempo defensive spell to stay ahead. But just as a 2-drop flyer, it still works. But even as a 3/2, it's not going to. It's always going to trade with a morph that's blocking. Yeah.
Like, theoretically, this could also morph into, like, a 1/10, and that would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it won't trade with a... won't kill a 2/2 and stay alive.
Incoming 1/10, calling it now.
Yeah. What's interesting about Megamorph, and this is something that I'm kind of interested to see, like...
nothing, I was just kidding.
No, this is the one interesting thing about Megamorph. So, obviously, Obzon have some things that care about +1/+1 counters. So, you know, a lot of them that are really powerful, like, Obzon, Anok Bondkind, Obzon Battle Priest, those are all Constantor Cure cards. So they're going away, but there's some that are still in, Fate Reforged that are sticking around, like, Dragon Scale General's the bolster guy, the, Elite Scale Guard, you know, basically the mythic uncommon that just makes it like impossible to block your dudes if you have +1/+1 counters on them. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that they brought in a mechanic that gives +1/+1 counters to basically all colors of creatures off of Megamorph, but really only has some synergy with one of the clans coming in. I'm curious to see how they kind of balanced around that and kept that in mind, because like, you know, hey, if I'm just going to draft like a, you know, kind of like a three or four color deck with all these, you know, Megamorph dudes, and when my mana comes online, whoops, I get my Scale Guard, or I get my dude that cares about +1/+1 counters and just start going to town here. You know, it seems like that's an interesting thing that could happen, and I'm curious to see what other cards with Megamorph might make that
real interesting happen. Adam,
sorry. Who's paying? I'm in the limited. I'm sorry.
Who's
it's interesting
paying
to me.
You
he's you know, he's sitting there because we can't see. Well, this is audio. I can't see Adam. I imagine he's just, it's like in Wayne's World where Garth is wearing all the Reebok stuff, but it's just all Megamorph.
We do not allow Wizards of the Coast to alter the opinions of our show, Adam. You know that, right?
I'm pretty sure Wizards of the Coast would never ever want to be associated with any podcast I've ever been on.
But I don't know about that. They used to hook you up with stuff all the time.
I have to give them credit. I still get my little gift pack with every new set release.
Nice.
Yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah, so like, look, I know, Conley, you're going to say some stuff about Megamorph.
No, I don't need to say anything. It's already obvious. It's a shitty, crappy, poopy. Is there any other words for fecal matter? Fecal mattery.
Fecal. How about fomite? That's a really good one. Fomite. Basically, fomite is like how you would spread something by fecal matter. Like, if I touched my butt, then I touch your eye, you're going to get that horrific disease, because that little piece of poo. That's all right, so
you were in the flow though, Tom. You kind of like, you didn't have to, like, you got to wait until after the joke, and then you could have filled us in with all that knowledge. But instead, you kind of like, you like broke it down, and it kind of ruined everything, you know.
So the thing that I don't like about Megamorph is that I feel it's very safe. You know, it's kind of a little blasé at a surface. Like I'm reaching there with like my, you know, like I admit, like, that is the one super compelling thing that I thought about Megamorph is, it's going to interact a little weird with some of the cards from Fate Reforged. I wonder how that was thought about. You know, like, that is like kind of the corner case, and that's what I'm bringing up. Like, I would have loved to have seen some mechanic that like basically like take us back to Onslaught, where we can like turn stuff face down again. Like some sort of like you know, like creatures with morph could also have a creature that's like, you know, like you know, like hidden, or like you know, like dragon step. You know, that maybe that's what they would call it. You know, dragon steps. Like the dragons empower them to like become hidden, or like step through, you know, step into like the morph form and kind of like conceal themselves again. So like you could have like a really small guy with like basically a repeatable morph cost, you know. Like every time you turn it up, you can put a +1/+1 counter on something. Or every time you turn it up, target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn, or target creature gains haste. You know, something like that, you know. And I know Wizards is really gun shy. They've talked about it in, you know, in their development columns about how repeatable board states and repeatable effects are really problematic for the game. So I can imagine, you know, that probably puts a kibosh to that. But like that's kind of the one thing that would make morph, you know, kind of really evolve or be compelling for me. Because, like, we see these guys as morphs. Great. Like, well, they got to do it again, right? Like, and I was kind of expecting to see some sort of repeatable thing, you know, because we've got ways to, like, manifest over and over with Mastery of the Unseen. Just chain all the manifests off the top of your library. Like, why can't I remorph my morphs? I don't know. Or manifest or morph something that, you know, or manifest something, morph a creature and play down, like offensively, like, okay, well, you've got that big fatty, well, I'm going to pay some mana and make you turn it face down. It's manifested, so you can flip it back up, but, you know, I make you spend mana doing that instead of something else, like a kind of like a de facto bounce spell. You know, I don't know, like I feel like there's more play available, and I wish I saw it.
Did I tell you guys about my new musical project I'm working on?
Tell me more about
it. It's like a little DJ project on the side, you know. It's like a little bit of like dubstep meets kind of like underground rock. I call it dragon step.
Okay. I've got it so far.
All right, that's all I had. Every time Adam said dragon step, I was just thinking about some terrible EDM genre that is yet to exist, that I'm sure if I go look it up now.
Wait, Conley. All right, question. What is a better name for a mechanic? Megamorph?
Of course, Megamorph's terrible. They could use Mighty Morph. They could use anything. It would have been better. But Megamorph is obviously the worst. I agree. Also, it's just not a mechanic.
It should just
also
be Morph in all capitals.
The mechanics in general in this set are pretty lazy. It's like a couple returning mechanics, none of which are exactly the most exciting in the world. They're just kind of like limited things. Then another mechanic that if you don't have any other text on the card and you just put this mechanic, all it does is let you sacrifice something, which is terrible. It always has to be coupled with something in order for you to be excited about the card. And then the last mechanic doesn't, it's just a keyword. It's like a ability word. It doesn't actually do anything on its own. I don't know. It's pretty, overall, I think the mechanics are fairly lame in this set. But in terms of limited play, it does look like it will be fun. Like Rebound is a very fun limited mechanic. Bolster was fine. I think it was mostly underrepresented out of the last set in terms of limited play. Like you'll see a couple of Bolster cards see play, but a lot of them were just not the most exciting things in the world. Same for Dash. There's like two or three legitimate Dash guys, and outside of that, you're kind of not very happy to play them. But with this set, at least, I think all those mechanics are pretty strong and limited, and there should be enough that see print that we'll be playing a lot of these mechanics. So for limited, they look exciting. For constructed, not so much. They're going to be based on the individual cards. Like Sidisi is an extremely strong exploit card because it has extremely strong exploit tie-in, but most exploit cards are going to be minor tie-ins, like the one right next to it, which is gives something, it's 5 mana, 3/3, that gives something -3/-3. Like, again, good limited card, obviously not designed for constructed. Unless you like Bad Shriek Moss.
Yeah. Well, and maybe we can view this positively, that since they didn't spend, obviously, a lot of creative juices on the abilities, that maybe we're going to get some just really cool, out-of-the-box thinking cards for the set.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not going to diss any individual card design. I just think overall the mechanics are not that exciting, considering that it's kind of like, this is like Adam kind of set it all up. Like, this is the alternate reality. Like, he could have had everything be like completely new and different and like really wacky, do like some really fun take on Morph. But like the output is you get a +1/+1 counter. Like the name, even if you keep that crappy name as like, okay, we're distinguishing Morph from New Morph by calling it Megamorph. Like the output is a +1/+1 counter. That's the big difference. It's just kind of like pretty lame. Like, what if the output was like, this is on instants and sorceries, and when it unmorphs, you cast it. Like, that would be badass. That'd be a cool riff, and it would be like an alternate timeline, etc. But a plus one counter is like, you know, come on. I don't know. It's like you pay for like the $60 upgrade for your hotel room, and it comes with free cable or something. It's just not worth it.
No.
So in defense of exploit, I just want to point out that it's another downside mechanic, kind of like how Delve was, and kind of at first, you know, it took a little bit for people to figure out how just stupid good Delve can be. I mean, it's affected Legacy, it's affected Modern, it's already been banned out of formats. You know, it's done its work. So I would just be really curious to see some of the other exploit triggers, because I could see some really, really tempting, powerful things to do, especially if you have disposable creatures and you can repeatedly start exploiting them. I mean, and also Sidisi stands on her own. I mean, a 4/6 death touch for 5 mana is bonkers. Like, she's just good without anything else to do, and just exploit is total upside. So I think those guys are going to be really kind of the standouts. You know, I'm excited to see other rare exploit creatures.
So, Adam, you actually put this on the kind of pre-show notes, is that they've also added something, I guess to me, kind of interesting to your upcoming Dragons of Tarkir pre-release. Yes. It being a different way to generate what kind of prizes you'll get that has nothing to do with your Magic playing ability. Which for scrubs sounds really cool, like me. I'm guessing for other players, they may not necessarily think this is great.
Right. I mean, you know, it's the things to do to pre-release that aren't strictly playing the game of Magic are always kind of polarizing, right? Because a lot of people are like, well, I play Magic. Why am I doing this other thing? But from a game design standpoint, right, like having other types of experiential events happen, bring in more players, can make players more committed to the game. It creates a richer game experience. It doesn't feel like, so like if you like playing Magic, but you also like the other things that are going on, it's a net win for those players versus the players that love Magic. They're going to be captured anyway. You know, so basically like the Tarkir Dragon Fury, it's kind of like this way of like, I'm a cool, you know, Dragon's Tarkir is all about dragons, so now I'm a dragon, and now I'm going to breathe fire on all these little idiots on the battlefield, and I'm going to try to kill them. And they're just like, it's kind of like, I compared it to like duck pin bowling, but that's not quite right. There's got to be a game that actually is like this, but basically
there's all two games, because I actually did some research on this before the podcast, Adam.
Yeah, so you can tell me about the games, but like, so they're just little figures set up, and you just throw you roll your die at them, and whichever ones you knock down score you points, and that's like it.
So the two games that came to mind when I saw this, and I guess, did you describe kind of the game board where it looks like sort of a I guess was it looks like a hexagon? Is there six sides in this thing? And it looks like little strategic.
Looked a little flask shaped to me, kind of like
flask.
A
okay.
Conical, like you're breathing fire forward, and this is like your range that you can breathe in.
And there's looks like a collection of, I would say they look to me almost like Stratego pieces, maybe roughly about that size with various point values. And suppose you take your spin down die and you throw it into this flax hexagon battle arena. You knock down these little things. They have point ranges of 1 to 4, and depending on how many points, it tells you basically what prize you'll get, and you get to do two rolls, and you get to take the highest value of your two rolls, and it sounds like you can do this between every round of the pre-release, if I was understanding their write-up correctly.
That's what it sounded like. It was like something fun.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool, where, you know, if you're not necessarily a great player, you're just there to kind of try. You don't necessarily plan to do more than like be 2-2 or something like that. It's a reason to actually stick around for further rounds after you probably know you're not going to get any better prizes. But hey, you might be able to get a cool thing by doing your Dragon Breath game.
Do we know what the things that you can win, what the range things are?
Yeah, they say is basically at 3 points, which sounds like you would. As pretty much as long as you get your die inside there, you probably can get 3 points total. You get a land. At 9 points, you get a land and common. 12 points, it's a land, common, and uncommon. And then 18 points is land, common, uncommon, and a rare. And it says, I can't tell you exactly what cards you get just yet, but you can earn up to 4 alternative artwork promotional cards, depending on how well you roll, one of which is a rare dragon. So I'm guessing that there's only four cards you can get through this, so you potentially might get many multiples of those cards. Now, I'm curious, they're going to have more rules. So what would prevent me from using my God-given Dragon Breath to just throw my die in there and then just blow all these damn things over with my actual breath?
Probably common sense in whoever's watching you do it.
Hey, what's more flavorful than me using my own Dragon Breath to knock these things over?
So I, you know, like, I love this kind of gimmicky stuff. Like, I call it gimmicky stuff because, like, I'm in marketing and, like, you know, it's just part of it is, like, you create these extra things to give people things to do and pull in people. And, you know, it's not going to entertain everyone. Like, you know, I can hear the unimpressiveness, you know, just from Conley thinking about it from here. But, like, for somebody who's new to the game, like, this is, like, a really cool thing. Like, oh, cool, it's all about dragons. I'm going to be a dragon and get some bonus thing just for, like, showing up here and doing this. Like, it's just an easy feel good that's thematic. The thing that actually really bugs me about this is something that I saw almost immediately on Facebook. I'm friends with total credit to Jeff Foster for this. He put a quote up and it was like, remember, kids, roll your die to determine your prizes, but not to determine the outcome of a match. And, you know, it's just like one of the most common mistakes players make is like, you know, hey, you know, let's just draw, or like, you know, hey, I don't really want to battle, but like, you know, whoever wins gets like a pack. Let's just roll for a pack. And like, that's just super bad. Like, you just get disqualified. You get nothing. You know, you lose. Good day, sir. And it's just like super awkward to have like this, you know, I can imagine somebody coming to a pre-release for the first time, getting explained to this dragon fury thing. They go do this extra thing and it's like, oh cool, I can roll my die for prizes here, and then go sit down in a match and like think like it's cool to roll their die for prizes there too. It's just one of those like cognitive dissonance moments where I'm like, that's kind of awkward. You know, like they have to use the die for knocking these things down, because like every player gets one, like that's just part of the pre-release kit. But man, is it super awkward for somebody who isn't aware of what, you know, collusion and all of that are.
Yeah, think of the poor like game store grunt that has to sit there and man the dumb little pieces. Okay, I guess that my little doinkers again. Dink, dink. Unless it's like Guess Who, where you could just shake it and they're actually all hinged. If these are actual individual pieces, oh my god, give those people a gold medal for putting up with this all day.
That's where that goes. All right, moving on. that sounds like the death of a topic to me. That is what a topic sounds like when
Tom stabs that one to death.
No, that's fine. We had nothing else to squeeze out of that one.
No, yeah, pretty much. So let's talk about tournaments. Adam, you said you are actually going to be trying to play in a big competitive Magic tournament.
I mean, it's not trying. It's I am and win. I mean, it's as simple as that. So I've been drafting and playing sealed a lot, just a ton. Really started to get picked up in Khan's Tarkir, which is, you know, just a great format overall. You know, there's been some grumblings and some adjustments with adding Fate Reforged to the mix, but I've really gotten into it, and I've been playing with a bunch of local guys. Basically mid-Atlantic ringers is kind of how I would group them together. Some, you know, players with top eights, Grand Prix top eights, and
mid-Atlantic, it sounds like an acapella
under their belt.
Sorry.
Yeah, just a really, you know, just a good group of very solid players, and you know, I've been doing well, and I've been really enjoying you know, kind of doing team drafts where like we'll determine teams in advance and then sit down so like you can like hate stuff away and mess with other people, and you know, it's like it's honest to god just, you know, fighting, just good competitive Magic, and you know, we're all having a good time, but like we're also all talking to each other and trying to learn things and figure things out, and you know, it's just I've really enjoyed it, and I rarely get an opportunity to play in a tournament. I even rarer feel compelled or desire to do it. And I'm just at a point where, like, you know, I want to do this. And Atlantic City is close enough to drive to. I'll have a ton of friends that I can kind of split the cost with and defray it. You know, I'm not working on coverage that weekend. And I can kind of throw my hat into the ring. And
I wish it'd be both. I wish, like, every feature match would just be your match. And Adam Staborski in the next feature match.
I mean, my plan is to find a GPT. get my two buys before I go in, because there's no way I'm going to earn the Planeswalker points or whatever qualification takes for three or any buys. I just need to win a GPT and get two buys. Go undefeated on day one, so I kind of have to be in the coverage, and then just make top eight and win out from there. Like, I just have to win three drafts on Sunday. Like, that's great. That's easy. Like, I've done that before, so...
Meanwhile, I will not be playing in said tournament. If I was able to make a tournament, it's going to be Miami. There's still a small, small chance I go to Miami, but less than 5%, I would say. But outside of that...
What does it depend on that gives it such a low chance of success? Do you have like an unscratched raffle ticket or something that you're just waiting to see if it...
No, honestly, it comes down to whether or not I break the format in the next day or so. Like, if I have a deck that I feel is outclassing other things, then I'll go. And if I'm playing just some random deck right now, I don't feel like there's any one particular like deck that you can outshine other players on. Like, you can play Abzan, which is probably the de facto quote unquote best deck, but it's not necessarily the best deck by very much, and you can't really do a ton with it to gain a huge edge. I would say that, like, Steve Rubin's been doing the best work he can with that, and having quite a bit of success, but even the changes he's been making have been pretty slight from time to time. So now that he has a very good list that was published from last weekend, other people are going to be caught up to speed, and it's going to be pretty hard to gain an edge by just playing one of those decks. So if I come up with something that I feel is, like, extremely strong and I'm really excited about it, and I'll have fun playing in the tournament, then I'll fly down there. Otherwise, I will not be. I have a ticket booked, but it's refundable, so it's whether I refund it or not.
That seems very reasonable. Well, I'm just waiting for a lull so I can talk about some classic board games that...
Oh, we're not going to talk about your board games. No, it's just been...
Fireball, damn it.
It's just one of those things where when I get back into the game, like, I'm starting up Deck Doctor again, which is kind of a nice way for me to get back into competitive, like, kind of an on-ramp, if you will.
Oh, where will this what outlet would people be able to find the Deck Doctor when it starts?
So you can find the article on it. Well, all the Deck Doctor stuff will be Channel Fireball.
Okay.
You can find the article I wrote on it to give you information on how to submit a deck and whatnot on Channel Fireball. It's up. It went up last night, I think.
Oh, so
it's
up now. Life of living hell. Okay.
Okay. I mean, I've already gotten like probably 50 tweets today. But yeah, doing it through Twitter this time, where basically you submit your deck via a deck building website of some kind, MTG Vault, MTG, there's like all kinds of different ones. But basically you build a deck on there, then you tweet it at me with the hashtag Deck Doctor, and that's how I sort through them this time, as opposed to going through an email, which was took a lot more time and often was it was not the most fruitful. You would read through a lot of stuff, and then the deck would be bad, and it would be a waste of time. So this is more decklist related, so hopefully it goes a little bit faster on me. But like things like that that are enjoyable, that I can have some fun with the game, have a little bit of like kind of space to breathe while I do things like PTQs and stuff locally, are kind of the way I want to get back into it. Traveling to Grand Prix on the other side of the country, while I think I have a legitimate shot to do well, I don't think I have the best shot that I could. Like, I am not well practiced. I don't have necessarily a great deck, so I know that my chances for me personally are lower than I would like. So it kind of seems like a poor EV play, especially when I'm not really looking forward to that much travel. Traveling from here to Miami is pretty far or whatever. So, you know, local, I'm definitely going to be going to Vegas, so that'll 100% be on the radar. There's a chance I go to there's something, Atlantic City, that's the other one, that's a limited Grand Prix. There's a chance I go to that one, uncertain, but yeah, I'm just kind of trying to take things slow and enjoy myself, as opposed to rushing in super fast and getting burnt out really quickly again, kind of like an athlete injury or whatever. Like, you don't just get back out on the court the second you feel like you can, because, you know, you're gonna hurt yourself again. So I don't know, that was my monologue for the night.
Oh, that's cool. I'm just trying to think of the worst deck I can submit to you. It's going to take some thought.
You realize I don't have to pick your deck. It's not like I'm looking at every single deck.
No, but you as a deck, like as Adam said at the start of the show, you you want to help people. This deck is going to be so godly awful. You just be like, I need to fix this person's deck.
All right. And you're going to submit under a fake name. Is that what you're doing right now?
Yep. Okay. I've been typing on my phone a little bit.
Cool.
But now I want
to send it. I'm passing the mic. Somebody else go.
Now you're not even going to. I'm not even actually going to send it. You're just going to spend the next 2 weeks just going through all these decks. People saying like, which is the fake one from Tom? Which one was the fake one from Tom? And it's not going
to
be there.
I'm pretty sure I would be able to discover the fake one from Tom way too quickly.
This one's named Dolomite. This might be it.
Yeah.
All right. 140 characters. Oh, okay. Anything else on this? I feel like we've kind of wrung the goat dry a little bit tonight.
Yeah, you do. First of all, Tom, do not send. I don't want you to type out a list on Twitter. That's not the point. You're not supposed to fit a deck list into 140 characters.
Well, no, that's why I have to send you probably 45 tweets in a row.
No, it's not how it works. You go to one of the deck building websites. There are plenty of them out there where you can work on decks and stuff to buy them from a store or whatever. And then you link your deck to me via Twitter.
Oh, see, my the website I was going to use, it's called, let me find, I have the link here. That's right. It's called Notepad, I think. It's okay. Called.
It's a strong play.
Thank you. Okay, good. Now, I'm trying to think, apprentice. There we go. I'm going to send it like an apprentice. Is that program still around? Or has it pretty much been taken?
I feel like the only one that's around still is Cockatrice, or did that one get. One of them still around, and the rest of them got yelled at or cease and desisted by WotC.
It looks like Cockatrice is still. It sounds like it's kind of up and down depending on servers.
Sure.
So it sounds like it's not super dependable. But since it is basically piracy, I guess, what can you do?
I mean, it's piracy to an extent, but it's piracy for a product that a lot of people can't afford and would otherwise not be playing. It's not like they would necessarily be playing Magic Online and playing those decks because people go on to test decks and cards that are way too expensive for them. So, if WotC offered a free-to-play version of Magic Online, then I think there would be a little bit more gripe there. But, denying people the opportunity to play Magic, Cockatrice, there's a good chance you're doing so because you're testing for a paper game. So all you're really doing is playing with proxies, quote unquote. And I know WotC can't officially endorse proxies, but they could also kind of turn a blind eye to them when you're playing with your friend across a school desk or something.
And this is I saw a little bit of a hullabaloo on Twitter today about I've never used the service, but there's pukatrade.com. Have you guys ever done any?
No, I don't even want to say that term too often. It just seems like
you've heard of the website though, correct?
Or I have actually.
Yeah, it sounds strange. But so basically, I'm just reading their website. I had heard about this maybe a few months ago. I know it's been around longer than that. Where it's sort of an asynchronous trading system, where as far as I understand, you send cards to this service, and this generates points, and they can then use those points to basically, I guess, trade/buy other cards that people have sent in. But the big change apparently coming today or very soon is they're now starting to also include, this was for paper Magic, but now they're also going to be doing MTGO cards. So now it seems like a more direct conduit of going between paper Magic and digital Magic. Nice. And I didn't know if you guys thought this would be a major thing. Is it?
If WotC allows it, it seems like it could be a cool thing. By the way, really quickly, the reason it's called Pukatrade is from the card Puka's Mischief.
Mm-hmm. I love that card. Yeah,
fair enough. That's where the term comes from. But I mean, if it's something that like I said, WotC kind of turns an eye, a blind eye to, and says, okay, go ahead and do this because it's convenient for our customers to be able to kind of have it, a way to exchange physical and digital. Then it would be cool, but there's also a good chance that they come in and just shut this down or whatever. I don't know. It seems like it might be not 100% okay. Seems like there might be some issues there. I don't know exactly what. I'm not, I don't know the specifics of this deal or whatever, but.
So it was just I haven't seen a lot more details about it, but it seemed sort of an interesting potential option for a lot of people where this would be something to me if I could even translate a handful of some potentially more valuable paper cards that I don't use much and I could get a little bit bigger collection in MTGO. To me, that sounds kind of interesting. And of course, everybody is, you know, the sky is falling. What is this going to, you know, raise, you know, MTGO card prices? Because they quite often, outside of some very specific examples, they tend to be less than paper Magic. But most people feel this is would just be a, sounds like a pretty positive change if they could do this. And I would just love this. I imagine this as being a guy in his basement.
Did Adam die? I think Adam might have died.
Did Adam die?
I just have no comments on this.
Is it because you aren't able to comment, or you just don't have any thoughts?
It sounds mostly like
speculation. I don't really have thoughts on it. It's kind of it's not my thing. I don't really look into it or care. It's just how I feel about it.
That's the most negative I've ever heard you say about anything Magic related ever.
We clearly have not talked about the right people.
Conley, do you agree with me?
In a public forum, yeah, I will agree with you.
Okay, yeah, I mean, we all have our scathing rants in private, but. Interesting. Usually I'm the one that kills a tangent or a thread this time.
No, it's fine. This was a terrible thing to talk about anyway. Nobody at home cares.
Adam stabbed the whale with a harpoon and it's dead. It's gone.
Well, it could have been an already dead whale. You don't know.
Yeah, I guess they both float. Well, I guess a live whale doesn't have to float.
Instead, let's talk about the Homerid spawning bed.
Oh, I love that. I love that card.
You do? It's a blue and a blue enchantment. It does nothing. And then you pay a colorless blue. You sacrifice a blue creature to put X Camarid tokens into play, where X is the casting cost of the sacrificed creature, and you treat those Camarid tokens as 1/1 blue creature.
Yeah, totally busted with deep spawn. Oh. Did that many times in my day.
You see. And the thing is, you have to sacrifice blue creatures every time, and you can sacrifice a blue Camarid token, except it doesn't have a casting cost, you won't get any additional tokens, so they didn't have to put any crap on there about non-token creatures. The beauty of old sets right there.
And the art, even the art is...
This art is terrible. It's like...
It's great! It's some eggs hatching?
It's like a Mars... It's like the planet Mars with a bunch of red eggs that kind of look...
There's no water and it's inside at all on this.
Yeah, and then it's like there's an egg cracking, and then the background there's two lobster men, and they're just overlooking all the eggs.
I love Camarids and Homerids, and I'd like to fall on Empires. I'm sorry, I really like the Homerids. But I love them.
I would like to point out that a lot of people dismiss these like crazy old cards and say stuff that's so terrible about. You know, that they're just awful and blah, blah, blah. But Homerid's spawning bed is actually just, like, amazing with the commander card Reef Worm. Because it starts off as a 4-mana card, and you get 4 tokens, and you can start chaining out your bigger and bigger creature tokens. Like, if you don't have any other way of sacrificing your creature, like, you can at least start... with Homerid's spawning bed, and you always have a mono blue sacrifice outlet for a mono blue deck.
Sweet.
Oh god, I'm just reading the actual text on the actual Homerid creature. Oh, it's so just complex and useless rules text. Oh god, it makes me love it.
All right, I motion to adjourn.
Put a tide counter on Homerid when it is brought into play, and during your upkeep, if there is one tide counter on Homerid, it gets -1/-1. If there are 3 tide counters on Homerid, it gets +1/+1. When there are 4 tide counters on Homerid, remove them all. Oh!
Wait, so 2 counters doesn't do anything?
No. That's what I love.
So when it has one counter on it?
This is top-down design 101. When the tide comes in, it gets stronger. When the tide goes out, it gets weaker.
But tide tokens makes – there should either be one or no tide, because it's either it's high tide or it's not. Yeah, there shouldn't be 4 or 3 or 2.
One makes this a 3-mana 1-1. 2 makes this a 3-mana 2-2. 3 makes this a 3-mana 3-3, and then 4 goes back down to a 3-mana 2-2.
and just knowing that this is one of the first sets where they really started pushing that power level, because, you know, for example, Homerid Shaman, 2 blue blue for a 2/1 with the amazing activated ability of blue and tap a target green creature.
It's a good one.
That is stops really armor buff.
It does.
Nobody's laughing now.
No. And also looks pretty cool to see like a little crab shaman dancing by the moon.
Wait, just, is Homered Leper a real card?
Homered Leper? I mean, with a changeling, yes.
This the bands with other Homerids? No, this is a fake card. It's got to be.
Yeah, those are fake. Okay. But what's not fake is Viscera Drone, which is a blue and a colorless for a summon Homerid. I'm reading the actual card, so you can suck it. It's a 1/2. Tap, sacrifice a creature and a swamp to bury target non-artifact creature. Well, that's actually potentially useful. And tap, sacrifice a creature and a snow-covered swamp to bury target creature. This was from Alliances. That's why it's better.
I see.
Oh, God. I want to open a pack of Fallen Empires right now.
Well, I think Homerids is about as deep as we've ever gone into the magic well, so...
Should we wrap it up?
I voted to put the motion on the table, and nobody backed me up. So
well, we did put the motion. We just put it in the ocean and started talking about Homerids instead.
Yeah. what blows my mind? Just to wrap this Homerid thing up with beating the horse a little more is that so there's a format called Gatherer Bad, and basically you can only take cards. You can only use cards in Gather that have like a community rating of like 2 or less. Basically, it's just like the worst cards of Magic. Homerid's Spawning Bed has 4 stars. Like, it's not particularly great, but it still has 4 full stars. 4.322 out of 5, based on 45 votes.
Dude, people love it.
I just can't stop
it's the art. It's got to be the art. It's got to be the art.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I didn't realize there was a Homerid in Time Spiral. Viscera Deepwalker is technically a Homerid.
He's unblockable.
Bam. I like that.
He switches power and toughness or something like that, I think.
I already mentioned Deep Spawn.
He's just Fire Breeze, that's right.
It's just a big ass lobster. I love it. For 8 mana for a 6/6 that may not untap and mills you.
Oh, right, so it's just like the Homerids of old.
Yeah. Oh, this is why I love Magic, is this kind of stuff. If you just historically look, boy, for the cost of a Tarmogoyf, if I times that by 4, I get a lobster that's a 6/6 trample. I like it. With 3 blue.
Oh, all right. Let's be merciful to our listeners.
All right, Adam, can you tell us?
This is only so that way Tom can claim he still has a job for his 401k.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast does not actually have listeners.
All right, Adam, tell people where they can find us, where they can email us, and then we'll plug our Twitter feeds.
Well, as of this weekend, I'm not sure the show will go up this week. It might. You know, it depends on how busy Tom is here getting back in the swing of things. But I'll be at PAX East this weekend. That's in Boston, Massachusetts, hanging out with Bruce Richard, Serious Fun Writer, and some other great Magic folks. Going to the panel on Friday, hearing all about Dragon's Dark here, going to the Bruins game on Sunday. It's going to be a good time. And I'll be at Grand Prix Cleveland doing coverage the weekend after that. So if you want to say hi, swing by the main event stage, ask for Stibbs, and there will only be one, I guarantee you. Otherwise, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm the_Stibbs, STYBS. You can also catch my articles and columns on GatheringMagic.com and MagicTheGathering.com. Conley.
That was my segue.
Conley. Just
say my name.
Conley, Twitter.
Say my name. Say my name.
All right. So I will not be at PAX East because I don't live anywhere near PAX East. I will probably be at some random concert or show in Colorado. So if you're near there, feel free to stop by and hang out with me. Other than that, like I said, I probably won't be any Grand Prix for a while. We'll be going to some PTQs, doing some online stuff, doing Deck Doctor, which is going to take quite a bit of time. So if you have any submissions you would like just to do for that, feel free to, like I say, get on Twitter, message me at Conley81, and then make sure you put a hashtag of Deck Doctor on there so I can sort through it pretty easily. Otherwise, feel free to just send tweets at me that are not Deck Doctor related, and do not put the hashtag, please. But yeah, outside of that, not much going on. I will have articles on Channel Fireball and TCG Player that you can check out, including one on some sideboarding techniques that should have, by the time you hear this, have already gone up on TCG Player.
Pretty cool. And all I have a Twitter feed that's a PSG Reader. That's about all I got for you. I don't write. I don't passage stream. Reader. Passage Reader. Pastrami Reader. Whatever you want to call it, that's where I am. God, Dick Doc. I hope people accidentally spell that Dick Doctor every once in a while for your hashtag and see where that gets them.
I won't sort, like, they won't show up in the feed when I go to sort.
Oh, that's too bad. That would probably be some
really good text. So if they do that, then we'll screw up. Hashtags are literally used as, like, library numbers or whatever, like, they're for sorting purposes. I know people have gotten out of control with them, and they, like, mean, like, I use mine sarcastically and whatnot, but they were originally intended to, like, group, like, things together.
Like, hoes be banging, stuff like that, yeah.
Yes.
Ah, yes, that's those are the tweets I want to find for my term paper.
Can we please wrap it up around all these banging hoes?
All right, so everybody, thank you for listening. This is Tom, Conley, and Adam. Adam's going to be having fun at PAX East. I don't know what I'll be doing next weekend. It'll probably involve, I don't know, it's supposed to be cold. I'm running out of things to do with a one-year-old and a three-year-old in the winter, so I need the winter to be over at this point.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya. I'm going to stop it.
Oh, Tom, you need help.